On today's Restomp podcast, we'll recap the win over Collingwood from the weekend. The Chief's pretty excited. He got back from the Bagpipe Festival and watched it on replay, so we'll get his thoughts right after we start wearing purple with Gogo Bordello. Welcome to the Restomp podcast. My name is Brett Jojo McDonnell, and I'm joined by a man who's still full of haggis from Saturday morning. That is Greg, the Chief Dwyer.
Yes. Hello, Jojo. What the hell was that?
It was a special thing I got done for you. I know your new appreciation of the Scottish, your Scottish heritage or half Scottish heritage. So I thought I'd get the start wearing purple done in a bit of bagpipe.
That was our intro. That was our intro music.
Yeah. What do you think? Just stick with it or just a once-off?
Jeez. People will switch off. They'll go, hang on, that's not the Restomp. That was nothing like it. That was like a snake charmer in India, Jojo, with a flute. Nothing
I'm just trying to get... You want to pay homage and pay respect to your partner's Scottish heritage? I just sort of get on board, do what I could.
And that's insulting it.
Mate, how was it? Do you reckon it at all compared to watching Frio take apart Collingwood at the G? Or at Marvel, sorry. That's where we were, wasn't it?
Yeah, Marvel. Yeah, absolutely not.
Yeah.
No. It was hard to sit through, Jade. I'm not going to lie. It was hard to sit through, but I did it. Be respectful. Embrace the other, you know, multiculturalism and all that. And my partner enjoyed it. She loved it. And but I said, that's it. We've been once, never again. So, no, it was a good day.
Did you last the full 4 hours?
Oh, I kind of didn't. I lasted an hour and a half. And a lot of bands there, a lot of Coburn, a lot of, you know, and the police band. The police were everywhere. You could have robbed the whole of Mandra. There was no cops anywhere else. So, it was interesting. I didn't last a whole lot, but went down a nice feed at a place called Flick's Kitchen, Jojo, if you're down that way in Mandra. Wonderful restaurant. Managed to not talk to anyone. Didn't want to know the score. Didn't have a phone with me. Didn't take any technology. Didn't listen to the radio. Got home, made it, and then watched a magnificent game on replay. So,
having said that, when you go out normally, it's pretty normal for you to not talk to anyone, and you usually won't have your phone because you do like a little bit of technology free time, don't you?
Love my technology free time. Don't even take a phone with me wherever I go. But I do talk. I love people. I love talking to people. But everyone else is looking at their phone. There's no one to talk to. I try to get away from technology, Jojo. So try to get away from all things I'm no good at. So,
so I take it you found time to in your busy bagpipe schedule to take a look at the game. What a win!
Loved it. Absolutely loved it. What a great game. Well, I reckon that was one of the best all year for us, and not just because we won. But it was the type of game it was. It was a good game, good quality game, good contest, had everything, good skills, had everything.
Big club in Melbourne, a ground we don't traditionally perform well at, except against Collingwood. Learned that in the head-to-head stats in the pregame pod. But something about that game, you know, you knock off a team, a big club in Melbourne, all of a sudden you grab the headlines and people want to talk about you where they just haven't wanted to talk about you all year.
Yeah. So weird, isn't it? It's very strange, and it's not only disrespectful, but to us and Fremantle, but it's disrespectful to all of yours because it shows you the lack of effort they put in to their analysis. So, and to make those calls on a game like against a team like Collingwood that's not even travelling that well, but very bizarre, very bizarre.
I kind of like it, though. You know, as much as, you know, we wanted to start this podcast just for the fact, you know, you turn on football shows, you turn on the radio, people don't talk about Frio. So it's as much about creating some content for fellow Frio fans as it is, you know, having a chat about the team ourselves.
Yeah.
But, like, you knock off a team like Collingwood and, you know, people want to celebrate. You know, it's not like the biggest win the club's ever going to have, but it allows you kind of to over-celebrate and get a little bit excited about where we're at, the players we've got, how much better they're getting and all that kind of gear.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I get it. I get that side of things. But Fremantle fans are clever enough. They know when it's a big win and when it's not, you know. And the most Fremantle fans know where we are and where we're going, where we've been, all that. So,
yeah, I don't know, but it's exciting. Like, that's what sports is about. It's having these moments where you have the, you know, the optimism, your team's, you know, tracking well and is, yeah, you know, is headed for success. And, you know, we've been kind of, you know, we've been talking about how we're probably not going to make the finals, how our schedule and, you know, the run home isn't conducive to getting 13 wins and improving the percentage to get into the finals. But there was a whole heap of finals talk after the game, and I love that. I love the fact that people that support the club are getting enthusiastic about it, you know, looking forward to next week, getting another win and starting to mount a challenge and, you know, hoping and, you know, reigniting that hope that we're going to be able to go on in the season.
That is true. That is true. And I get that.
Because you can't win it. You can't win a flag every year. You can't win a flag every 25 years. So if you're going to enjoy sport and enjoy following your team, you've got to celebrate these kind of successes. And you know, I know we've talked about expectations before and all the rest of it and how they lead to disappointment. But sometimes you have to embrace the expectations and the excitement. And that's what it's all about.
Yeah, it is true. And we all, actually, we do always sort of, I mean, I'm an advocate for actually just enjoying the now. Like, you know, and enjoying the moment and all that. So I get where you're coming from. I just find it disrespectful when clubs, when commentators, you know damn well they haven't been watching.
Yeah, or no, do you know what? I reckon a lot of these guys watch, but they're like probably like all your mates down at the Bagpipe Festival on their phones half the time, not paying attention, because they know nothing about the player's, you know, season or history or anything. It's all kind of you know, excerpts from Wikipedia or just snapshots of something that someone else has said on the radio that they've heard. You can tell it's not, you can just tell it's not an opinion formed in their own head.
No, that's exactly right. And that's what's disrespectful about it. But, you know, that's always going to be the case from four clubs outside, or most clubs outside of Victoria anyway. So what are you going to do, mate? You just got to grin and bear it and go get on. I'll tell you what, though, just quickly, you're talking about the finals. Now, it's still a long shot, JJ, but we are suddenly in a lot better shape this week than we were 7 days ago, or a couple of days ago.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think the problem is you look at the ladder and that percentage is just going to be so hard to overcome. It's going to need an extra victory.
Correct. But three birds, one stone on the weekend.
Yeah, GWS got knocked off by Hawthorn.
No, the three birds.
Oh, sorry.
Did us the Eagles.
Yeah.
Collingwood. And the Magpies. Oh, sorry. The Eagles, Collingwood, and
it was the Hawks, Sydney, wasn't it?
The Swans. Oh, all Swans. Lost. Brought us a lot closer. So I didn't see that happening. So, yeah, it's still a long shot, but we're closer than we were.
How do you think we got the job done on the weekend? I was particularly impressed with the way we defended. I thought we really forced Collingwood to kind of just that kick mark. It was slow footy. They kept coming back down the line at us. And then when they tried to transfer the play, we were set up so well across the ground. I think Jack Riewoldt tried to use the analogy of going on a bear hunt, except he got it completely wrong, which made me wonder if Jack Riewoldt actually reads to his kids or whether he just hears his wife reading from the other room. Because I think for anyone out there with little kids who's gone on a bear hunt before, you can't go over it. You can't go under it. You've got to go through it. But Jack said we've got to go around it. If you're going on a bear hunt, there's no going around it. You have to go through it. So that's not what Collingwood were doing. They were having to go around it, and that's what he was trying to get to, but he just completely stuffed it up. It wasn't an appropriate analogy at all. And
I don't know what a bear hunt is, but all I know about bears is if you get chased by one, run downhill. They can't run downhill because of their small front legs.
Anyway, that's what I just thought was good. We didn't let Collingwood go through us. They did have to go around us, and they were so slow moving the ball through the back. You know, we'd slowed them right back down. They had a heap more possessions than us at the end of the game, but obviously a lot less effective.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And I think it was probably one of those rare games where everybody played their role.
Yeah.
Almost to perfection. So, yeah, it was very interesting, JoJo. And pretty good summary you just delivered.
Oh, it's more thanks to Jack. But I think also, I think I saw a stat come up on screen. We had 10 goals on the board at the time, but 8 of our goals come from turnovers. So obviously turning the ball over and putting pressure on, getting really good turnovers in good areas, and then being able to send the ball straight back and score.
I think it was eight of the first 10
were resulted from turnovers. I could have got that wrong. I'm pretty sure I saw that on the telly. Sure, but I thought it was really good. And it's something I particularly enjoyed watching. We talked a little bit more about it later, was the three talls up forward in the first quarter. We spoke on the preview pod about how we had the ability to maybe stretch the Collingwood defence a little bit. And I think we absolutely did that in the first quarter. They were in all sorts with Tabs, Tracy and whatnot down there. didn't really know what they're doing.
It didn't last long, though, with Tabs.
No, unfortunately not. Yeah. As I said, the Pies did outpossess us. You know, 7 of the top possession winners on the ground, 7 out of the top 10 were Magpie players.
Yeah.
Is that a good thing? You know, I mean, if team wants to come and hold possession like that against us and we'll let them have it, but then hit them on the counter, is that the way we want to play, do you reckon?
Oh, I'm not too sure you want to allow that. Again, you can probably get away with it against a Collingwood. Are you going to get away with it against a Bulldogs or a Geelong or someone like that?
Probably not. But I think we did revert almost back to the way we were playing at periods last season, though, where we were so well set up behind the ball where anyone that tried to penetrate that was just kicking into a nest of really well set up Fremantle players. So it kind of forced them to hold the ball and try and do something else.
It did bring back shades of last year, didn't it? You know, but it wasn't that full on defensive aspect. Like that was there. There was a defensive mindset, but it was more positioning about it, wasn't it? Rather than, you know, one on one defensive shutdown players.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a full team effort.
Yeah, because we had I had a quick look at the stats, and 56 tackles to our 34, JoJo. They had 10 inside 50, we had 3. So it definitely wasn't that shutdown role. It was, as you were saying, everyone was positioned well and made them try to go around us.
Yeah, absolutely. What kind of pleased you most about the game when you sat down and finished watching it? What stood out in your mind?
It was the fluency. It was the combination of that defensive mindset, but the passages of offensive play that resulted in goals, and that we, you know, we kicked 14-7, our best ratio return.
I was waiting for you to say that. It's the 14-7. It's a 14-7, isn't it? For sure.
Well, I got to be honest.
We don't kick straight. We're not getting anywhere near them.
No, I wasn't impressed, to be honest, because it destroyed my under 151 points. So I'm a bit broke, but it was great to see. I did really enjoy it, to be honest.
I think that made all the difference on the weekend, just making more of the opportunities we created as well. Like in previous weeks, obviously, we've spurned chances and kicked behinds or kicked out of bounds on the full or just, you know, not scored, you know, the balls just remained in play and we've missed everything. But this week, I think we really made the most of our chances, and the composure inside forward 50 was there to see. Liam Henry one stands out in my mind where he could have just blazed away and tried to hit the man running to the square, but, you know, had a bounce, propped, came back on his left and then squared the ball up, and we got a shot right in front of the goals. So, I think the scoring efficiency is something that really stands out for me.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's obvious, isn't it? Like, it's our best return all year. I think it's only the third time, is it, we've kicked more goals than points. And, there was nothing not to like about it.
The big matchup coming in that we spoke about last week was Big Sean Darcy against Brodie Grundy.
Mm.
Been a fair bit of commentary around this. I mean, Darcy got a lot of press last week. Everyone's talking him up as, you know, the next great young ruckman, you know, overtaking the likes of Tim English, and I think we mentioned Sam Draper's the other one that people have kind of named, but came up against one of the preeminent ruckmen in the competition in Brodie Grundy. How did you think he went?
I thought he went super. I thought his game was outstanding. Now, admittedly, I think most people would have awarded the points to Grundy, but I'm calling it a draw. I think Grundy's two goals were obviously of huge benefit, but it does his work in the middle. You know, I think he curtailed Grundy's influence. You know, and to get 9 clearances, that was enormous.
I think if you looked at the stats alone, you'd say, you know, good even contest almost, yeah. But you'd probably lean towards giving the points to Grundy.
Yep.
But if you actually watched the game and paid attention,
yep.
I mean, Grundy snuck forward and had a couple of shots at goal, which I think is something that Sean Darcy's been exposed upon a couple other times this year, where he hasn't been able to go with his man deep into forward 50 and cover him off.
Yep.
But when the game was there to be won,
yes,
Sean Darcy was there to lay tackles, take marks, do all the stuff. That he was almost the man that took it upon himself to ensure that Freo was going to be standing on the podium at the end of that game. I think that the impact he had in the last quarter, for mine anyway, gives him the points in that battle because he had so many he took so many decisive actions, had so much input in the result when it mattered.
I thought that was
awesome to see. That's when you want guys to stand up, and we've been asking for that all year with Nat Fyfe out. Who's going to stand up and make a difference? And I reckon Sean Darcy put his hand up on the weekend.
Yeah, actually, you're dead right. Thinking about that last quarter and, you know, where it was his ruck work and to get it out of the middle, it was pretty special. How comfortable are we, Jota? How comfortable are we sitting back knowing he signed last week?
Oh.
It's just such a good feeling, isn't it? So.
You know, and we've spoken a bit about Chera re-signing. You know, Darcy still had another year to go, so there's not that panic to kind of get him done. But, you know, yeah, it's obviously great to have happen. Yeah. It does make you kind of look back at all the press and all the commentary around Adam Chera's contract, you know, after Darcy came out and was so adamant that he was never going anywhere. Frio's for him, you know, and he was delighted when they came to him at the break and offered him an extension and he snapped it up straight away.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Peter Sumiches and the, I don't know, Brad Hardy's probably been saying stuff. All the other, you know, mouthpieces that want to have a comment about something that they probably have got very little knowledge on. Maybe we've just got to sit in our hands and wait for Adam Chera because, you know, look at how straightforward it was to get Darcy re-signed in the end. There was no talk really, or from him, or it didn't appear as though he was even slightly interested in going home to Geelong. So
no,
it speaks volumes to the club, though. I don't think it's different.
No, I think it's different. I think Darcy had a different upbringing. He was at boarding school. He was away a long, long time before he came to Freo, Jojo. He's been out of home for a long time. I think Chera's are more of a family man, more of... It's different.
There's a different feel
about Chera's.
I'm a big advocate for drafting guys in a similar cohort, in a similar age bracket, and letting them determine what the club's going to be. They determine the culture. They almost craft it. And I think Chera's a big part of that with Brayshaw, Sarong, Darcy... You know, Young, Chapman, all these guys, they're a similar age. They know that they're all, you know, high-ceiling young players that can go through together and have success. I don't think Chera's leaving. And I think that Sean Darcy just exemplified what the culture is like down there at Freo. They don't want to go. They want to stay.
You keep banging on about that. And you're probably about this, you know, all together. They're all... If that was the case, Chera
happy families. We're happy families.
Chera would have signed already if that was the case.
Nah. Well, I reckon we're looking good.
Just quickly before we move on from the
Grundy and Darcy battle.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on Grundy's haircut?
Any thoughts on his haircut?
Did you not see his haircut?
He hasn't got
it looks like mum had whacked the bowl on top and just trimmed around the edges.
I didn't take the haircuts are your get up, Jojo. I don't take too much notice of haircuts.
You couldn't miss his hair. His hair is so distinguishable normally. He's got the top knot happening, your thing. But
it's not my thing. Don't say that's my thing. That is not my thing. That's your thing. You're the one that wore that.
I just thought, like, it's a pretty noticeable physical change, isn't it?
It was, actually. It was, I'm not a big haircut person. Hey, back to the Chera thing.
What?
If what's the stakes? I'm betting Chera goes. Right, you're betting he'll stay.
I reckon he'll stay.
What?
No, I think he'll stay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm betting he goes. If he goes,
okay.
Lunch is on you. Where at?
Mate, I've got a job. I don't have an ability to just take off and have fancy lunches 2 or 3 times a week.
Nor do I. one to do. But.
Yeah. All right. No, that's fine. I can accept that. I can accept that. All right.
Come up with somewhere. We'll get you getting the free lunch.
I thought through the midfield, JL spoke after the game about how well Mundy's, you know, he spoke about him sacrificing his game. You know, and I realize he kind of does what we need, but I don't know if there's been a lot of sacrifice. He's probably had close to a career year going through the midfield. I thought him and Brayshaw were fantastic on the weekend, and it was a really tough battle in there between the Collingwood mids and our mids. And probably yeah. think about, you know, it's about an even contest towards the end, but those guys really held firm for us all day.
Oh, you're dead right. You can get a bit blasé about David Mundy because he keeps doing what he's been doing for, what, probably 30 years now, JJ. But, it, you know, this was a traditional workplace. Mundy would be the kid that started in the mail room and he's now the CEO. Like, he worked his way up to the CEO. He was just outstanding yet again. But for me, it was Brayshaw who, you just constantly through that game, you're just giving him that sort of, you know, that wink and a nod of approval. He was just exceptional. And just future captain. Written all over it. Absolutely.
I spoke earlier about Darcy, you know, putting his hand up when it mattered, and I thought those two guys did as well. You know, and without Fife, that's what you need. It's done by committee, and it should always be done by committee.
Yes.
But I think, you know, those guys really led the line as well, starting in the midfield.
Well, you said like earlier on that Collingwood couldn't get through us, you know, and he was one of the reasons. Six intercepts, JoJo, like six inside 50s. Five scoring involvements. It's probably one of his better games.
Yeah.
It was exceptional. Absolutely. Yeah, loved it.
There were two leading possession winners on the ground, you know, followed by Aish and Akers and Collier not too far off as well, the three maligned recycled players that often cop the wrath of Fremantle supporters. But just before we get on to them, just want to speak about the forward line. We mentioned quickly earlier, Tabs, Tracy and Lobb. I thought the first quarter, if we had been able to persist with that and Tabs didn't come off with the calf strain, I reckon that could have been real trouble for Collingwood.
Oh, you'd have to think so, wouldn't you? I mean, I still want to see it work all in tandem, you know, work in tandem, all, you know, for over a long period of time. But I tend to agree. We would have extended their reach. Outreach. The height difference, the mobility. I think you're right. I think they would have been in a bit of hot water.
And much like we've missed Alex Pearce and Hamling throughout the course of, you know, the last year and a half, They really missed Darcy Moore. You could see a Darcy Moore-like hole in their back line, and we were exploiting it, I reckon. And maybe we didn't take full toll on the scoreboard, but you could see it coming.
Yeah, I'll get to that later too, but that was my question mark over the game. No Darcy Moore, but just on Tabs, he went off in the second term. I think was it second term? Yeah. Now to you, Jojo, I have to ask you: is sitting on the sidelines with your cardigan draped over your shoulders is that the universal polo club sign that your day is done? Is it?
It might be. I don't know. I saw your little post, and I know it was like it was a preeminent strike because you knew I was going to hit you for going to the bloody bagpipe festival rather than watching the footy. Well, I accept your criticism. I don't wear cardigans, so I'm not sure where it comes from. But
don't wear cardigans. No, thanks, Dad. That was a ripper.
No, he was going for that kind of preppy college boy look, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I would have thought, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it have been a bit chilly over in Melbourne? Maybe put the warm-up jacket all the way on.
Yeah, would have thought so, wouldn't you? So not the same fashion statement like you get around in, but anyway.
And just quickly on you disrespecting players that, you know, give their all for the Freo Dockers, does he reclaim a name now, or is he still Whatnot?
That's uncalled for. I apologise for that. That was unintentional. And
you said it like 15 times.
No, kind of, but it wasn't intentional. It was a mistake.
Well, just quietly, you know, I reckon Whatnot, after Tabs went off, was sensational. And a couple of the marks he took, especially the one in the last quarter when it really mattered, it was really good. He pushed a guy off in the ruck contest, which had been critical of him before for getting pushed off himself. Played with some physical presence, which is not something you'd normally say about Whatnot, but Yeah, I thought his game in the end was something that really turned it for us.
Do you know what though? Right, for the first time in as long as I can think of, Lobby, he actually grabbed the advantage and he destroyed his undersized opponent. You've got to call it what it is, JoJo.
That's fine. He's always going to be under his opponent. I reckon 7 times out of 10 is going to be undersized. That's the advantage. That's why he's a quality acquisition for us. That's why we should be kicking the ball to him.
You're suggesting what I'm getting at is he was on a inferior height, but also experience. You know, he was playing on a couple of youngsters.
But how many backs in the competition are tall enough and have got as good a reach as what Rory Lobb has, and especially when you take into consideration the mitts he's got to be able to clunk him. He should have a mismatch most weeks. And I think to what you first said, like taking advantage of that advantage, or taking advantage of the, you know, the physical kind of size he's got and the reach, I think it's great that he took advantage of it. That's what we need more week in, week out.
That's exactly right. But we need him to do it on the more experienced opponents as well, JoJo.
Yeah, no, but and I think that goes to speak when we got JT and Lobby and Tabs all in the same forward line, it becomes a lot easier, you know, because one of them is going to have a mismatch, aren't they?
Yeah, true.
Or one of them is going to have to take the third defender.
Yeah, that's true. I'm not knocking his game. It was great. It was huge. 17 touches, 8 marks, 4 contested marks. Kicked 3 goals too. Probably could have kicked another goal or two.
I reckon with him, though, he had good moments. It wasn't just about the stat line. He had good moments at good times when we needed it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, definitely. And he positioned well. He moved well. And I think he was also helped by the delivery as well, the delivery inside as well. I do wonder, though, had what we did mention earlier, had Darcy Moore been his opponent?
Yeah, it becomes a lot tougher, doesn't it?
Yeah. But you can only beat who you're up against, and he did that, and that's what we were asking for, and let's hope he does it again next week.
Yeah, absolutely. How excited were you? Because I was very excited. I had to post something on Twitter straight away. that bit of footy where Walker comes through the middle, bursting through the middle, and hits Tracy Lace out, who led straight up the middle of the field, and then turned around and kicked a goal. It doesn't get better than that. That is champagne football at its finest.
It really is, and on top of that, it's about time you started doing some social media work rather than living up to my. That was outstanding.
That's the best bit of play all year.
Absolutely, yeah. Do you know what though? As you know, you give credit to Brandon Walker, you know, for the delivery, but it was Tracy who made him do it.
Oh yeah, you know, his lead kind of dictated where the kick had to go, and presenting full chested, just like steaming out from goal.
Isn't that good? It's just
so good.
You know, and this might sound ridiculous, but I reckon that was possibly Tracy's best game.
Well, you say that every week. I don't reckon that was his best game. I think that he had some real good moments again, and that was one of them. But
you're missing. He only got 4 touches, just the 1 mark, 1 goal. His work off the ball was what I'm getting at, JoJo. His defensive 20 pressure racks he delivered. That's madness. 193 centimetres, 94 kilos. His agility makes it difficult for his opponents to get around him.
Yeah.
You know, when they've got the ball. He's a multifaceted asset.
Well, and I think that's what he spoke about when he had the interview with the Purple Rain Boys. And I thought it's like, and we spoke about how encouraging it is to hear it, that if it's not your day and the ball's not coming to you, you've got to impact the contest some other way. And he does it on the defensive side of the footy. He tackles, he chases, he blocks, you know, whatever he can do to help out his team. How valuable is a guy like that?
And that probably also, as you said, went a long way to helping Rory as well.
Yeah.
Rory Lobb get amongst it. So loved it. Rookie draft, JoJo. Rookie draft.
Maybe we'll just skip the national draft from now on.
Yeah. Just take all the rookies.
Yeah. Three Musketeers, Ace, Akers, and Collier.
Yep.
I think Collier's kind of escaping that group. He seems to be attracting more praise of late than the other two. Maybe Ace as well. I mean, he's had a good little patch. But they were all good on the weekend. You know, Akers.
Oh, they were great. Akers, I got to
Akers needs to be he needs to be engaged physically from the start of the game. They should start him in the ruck, or they should start him where someone hits him or gets his shorts or socks dirty or something, because as soon as he plays a game where he's forced into using his size and, you know, he is a big kid and gets him involved physically and engaged physically, he is a much better player.
Oh, isn't he? And it, surely that's got to wake up now. Like, if I play the combative game, I'm much more beneficial to the team. 10 contested possessions from his 22, Jojo. You know, it was the game we need from Akers. We need that week in, week out.
Absolutely.
And maybe it's hard. Maybe it is hard to play that highly combative nature every week.
But that's what gets him going. That
seems to
be, doesn't it? Otherwise, he doesn't find it. And it seems he's going at half rap power when he doesn't get that physical engagement early. Like, he needs it.
Yeah, that's right. I want to spend a little bit of time on Travis Collier, JJ, because I think, you know, and I've been critical of him, but I think it's been constructive. It hasn't been just critical for me for the sake of it. But in close forward encounters, there are always these moments that you look back and more so pivotal moments. So now, obviously, there was the Ferris Bewley one, the left foot goal off one step. But for mine, there was a pivotal moment from Collier. 5 minutes left in the game. Scores tied up. Rory Lobb won that contest from the Chera kick. He spun around, put handball, got tackle, spun around, got it to Tracy. Tracy had to pop it over the top to Chera, to Collier. You probably remember the one I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Now, Tracy butchered it. It went off the side of the boot. Didn't do Collier any advantages. But he made his way, got to the ball. Mayne grabbed him. Now, Chris Mayne's a notable... is a very notable tackler, very good tackler. And if you watch it, Collier was gone. He had both arms wrapped up, and just somehow he managed to wriggle one arm free, stand up in the tackle, and get the ball away to Schultz that got the goal. He doesn't get that arm out holding the ball every day of the week.
And, well, I don't know about that. Not with those umpires. Yeah.
But it was just... You know, I just think he deserves so much credit for that. I think I argue his best game for the club. And I know I say that a lot.
But arguably, you know, the second or third time you've said that in the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
But you can't say it about future games. But, 19 disposals, 5 score involvements, 340 metres gain. For what he is doing right now, Jodo, take my hat off to him. I thought his game was excellent.
Yeah, it was. And I think Aish as well performed pretty well as well. Like, you know, his game the other week was probably better, but there's a bit more consistency creeping in with these guys, and that's what we've ever asked for from
With Aishi.
These boys.
With Aishi, 21 disposals, went at 85%, 430 metres gained.
Yeah, it was good.
That's outstanding. That's great.
The other guy who, you know, we were kind of a little bit critical at selection because, you know, you don't want to see a guy who's been laid off for so long. You come in, play a game, like maybe you don't set the world on fire, but then get dropped the next week. Mm. And Bewley was due to be the medical sub, we found out, but with Fife pulling out at the last minute, he got a start in the starting 22. And didn't he make the most of it? I thought he was really, really good. Kicked the goal, obviously, in crunch time to get us up on top. But how do you see his game? And, you know, we saw him we spoke about him, obviously, in the review and saying we didn't see enough of him. You know, he's got to take his opportunities in the second half of the season in order to get re-signed, you'd think. He didn't do his chances any harm from his performance on the weekend.
I think you should be a bit more careful using the term we, JoJo. Because we didn't say that. We said something different. I remember correctly that Ferris Bewley was in my best 22 now. And you can go back and listen. I put him in my best 20. And you said, and I quote, he should start hunting for a contract in the country league.
You quote.
I quote.
That's not even paraphrasing.
Not even paraphrasing. But I loved it. I was devastated when he didn't get a gig, when I thought he was out, because exactly what we're talking about. You can't bring a bloke back for one game. He plays really well and then drop him. He's got something, Jota. He's a player, and there's upside there. 17 disposals, 2 goals. He replaced Fife and didn't play in Fife's role, but did a remarkable job. And he's got to get a gig next week now.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt he plays next week, surely.
Well, who goes out for him if Fife comes back in?
Well, I don't think, unless Fife's like 110%, I don't think you bring him back in yet, do you?
No, you're probably right.
It felt rushed. It felt rushed to bring him back in this week. I'm glad he didn't play.
Yeah. But anyway, say Ferris, JoJo.
Yeah, no, great game.
Say Ferris, Bueller.
The small forward brigade, Lockie Schultz with 3 goals, 1. Who else? Switter, Henry, Croden. They all had moments. How did we see their performances?
Yeah. I thought they were good. I thought they benefited from the team aspect and made their jobs easier. But they did them as well as you could ask. We're talking about Schultz and Crowden and Switter. Is that what you said?
Yeah, and Liam Henry. Put them all in the same kind of category, almost, wouldn't you?
Yeah, definitely. I think you owe Jay an apology.
Oh, who?
JC or Jay, what was his name on Twitter? Because you didn't put Schultz in your best 22. You said, no, he's not in our best 22.
I had Schultz on the borderline of our best 22.
Borderline?
Well, I just couldn't decide. I just think he's somewhere between our 19th and 25th best player.
So he's not in the best 20.
I don't think that's unfair, is it? I mean, he's had some really good games where he's hit the scoreboard. He's put on really good forward pressure. But he's also had some games where you've wondered if he's playing. And obviously, he played pretty well on the weekend. And that's awesome because that was a game that really counted and really mattered.
Yeah.
But yeah, I want to see more performances like that. And I think more in a row is what we're after.
Yeah, a little bit disrespectful, but we'll
I think that's fair enough.
It is fair enough. He's played some absolute Barry Crockers.
But he's also had some outstanding games.
He's had some rivers, yeah.
But, I mean, if you're going to, I think for me, Switkowski's probably the best, better option out of all those guys at the moment, right now.
Committer, JoJo.
Yeah, and it's great to see him re-sign. I mean, you'd have to think we've got a good deal on that because he gets the security of another AFL contract.
Yes.
And we probably get the benefit of a little bit of unders seeing the best footy that he can produce, but we haven't been able to see his best footy consistently for long enough due to injury. So we're probably not having to pay full tote on this contract, and I like it. I think it's a good signing.
I think it's a great signing. And if he imagine like what he did yesterday, Saturday, 14 touches and a goal, 8 scoring involvements. Now, that was his first game for over a month. He's been sporadically in and out of the side all year due to injury. He strings a season together in a couple of pre-seasons. There's huge upside in him, JoJo. Huge upside.
And I think Liam Henry on the weekend, his game again, I think, what did he kick? 2 goals himself and kicked that really smart little left foot dribbler. And then he also got involved. I mean, I think he had the last hand in, the assist on goal for 3 more goals. So, he's starting to be more composed. That kick that he centered up after he had to hold up and double back on his left was great. It's great to see a player use their opposite foot. But I think we're really starting to see what he can offer. I mean, when he was coming out 1 out in the square last year and he looked like a 55-kilo kid and he's up against, Tom Jonas from Port Adelaide or 100-kilo fullback, you wonder what JL's thinking. But, he does it again this season and it's a different prospect. He's got defenders a little bit worried, I think, at the moment.
He has, and he's gone from, as you said, gone from that, what's he going to do, to looking dangerous now every time he goes near the ball.
And he's finishing as well. He wasn't finishing last year. He wasn't finishing earlier this year. But as we get deeper into the season, I think if he feels more comfortable out on the AFL field, we're seeing what he's truly capable of. And Braden Maynard got a real close-up view of what he's capable of.
And he's doing more for longer.
In
longer games, longer in games now. No, it's great, isn't it? Mitch Crowden, JoJo.
The candy man.
Yeah, where are you putting him?
I don't know. He's a tough one, isn't he? I mean, not everyone can kick 3 goals a game. I think on the weekend, he probably did enough coming as he was the medi sub in the end, wasn't he?
I think he's the ideal medical sub.
I don't agree. I forget who it was. Someone tweeted during the game. It's like, why do we, we've had Tobe Watson, who's what, like a medium-sized defender, and now Croden as a medi-sub, and then I think Blakely in between time. You want someone with utility. Like, so if a you know, a player goes down, you've got the ability to shuffle the decks. I mean, I don't think either of those guys give you a huge amount. You know, Blakely's okay because you can plug him in the midfield and you pull someone out of the midfield to go forward or back, whatever you want to do. But I just don't, you can only really play Croden in one spot.
Yeah, I just think he gives you that bite.
It's the same as Tobe Watson. You can only really play Tobe Watson in one spot.
No, Tobe's not a good sub player. But I just think he can, like Croden can come on and kick you a couple of goals.
Like Bewley would be a good sub. Like Collier would be a good sub. You know, Someone with pace, someone with ability to play up the field a little bit if required, someone to go off halfback if required, someone that can go forward if required. I just think you need some utility and you need some ability to plug a hole if someone important gets injured.
Yeah, you want to be someone that can go wherever, whoever gets injured.
Yeah, but I didn't have a problem with what he did when he came on. I thought he impacted, you know, he obviously kicked that really good goal. And put on enough forward pressure, but...
Yeah,
it wasn't a standout.
No.
I thought in terms of the way the game flowed, part of our problem was, again, just these periods where we dropped off. There was a period at the beginning of the second quarter, and I thought at the middle to the end of the third quarter, our pressure really dropped off, and that's where we allowed some scores through.
Do you reckon it dropped off in the third quarter? I seem to think it coincided with Luke Ryan going off the ground.
Yeah, possibly.
You know? And as we know, you know, he is the key down there. But, you know, that doesn't take into account the second quarter then. I didn't really notice it a great deal in the second quarter. But I also think at times...
We didn't start quarters well. I can't remember us starting a quarter well. We took a couple of minutes at least to get into it.
Yeah. I tend to... Yeah, the first quarter, definitely. We took 5 minutes, you know, and they were cutting us to ribbons. But that... We still didn't allow, you know, multiple goals getting scored on us on a regular basis. So that was one thing. I tend to think a lot of times we might think the pressure's dropped off or whatever, but an AFL game, you know, goes in momentum. You get momentum swings.
And to be honest, it could have been Collingwood. I mean, we spoke on the preview pod about how they've put in some reasonable or pretty good performances in the last month or so.
Yeah.
You know, whether they come out after the break and, you know, they've got that little spurt in them and... We're probably not quite up to the mark, and it looks like there's a big gap. But I just thought there was a couple of periods in the game where we kind of dropped off too much, and there was too much of a gap between, you know, that real good pressure that we had and then probably the, you know, the lesser end of what we're at. I thought also as well, you could see a conscious effort to use the ball by hand to try and break the line and get over the back. But I thought we kind of got the balance of that a little bit wrong sometimes, and that cost us at times, just overusing the ball by hand.
Yeah, so you did right. That we fell into that trap then. We had trying to be too precise. You know, you can't be that precise all the time. Sometimes you just got to buy 50 metres and get it down there. But yeah, we're getting better at it, but it's still a trap we do occasionally fall into.
And I think we spoke about this earlier, but to be headed in the last quarter, you know, and Collingwood hit the front again, for us to have the character without a captain, Nat Fyfe, who usually is the one to dig in and, you know, turn things around for us, to turn it around and come and hit back and take the ascendancy of the game back and take the lead back.
Yeah.
What a great win for the club. What a great win for all those young guys. It's almost it defines the character of the group a little bit.
It does, doesn't it? It's a true measurement of growth when you can start doing that. You're on your way. And, you know, I think Sean Darcy maybe mentioned it in the interview after the game. That's a game we would have let slip 18 months ago, 2 years ago.
And he's not just saying that. That's absolutely fact. That's fact. There's no way we win that game last year without Fyfe.
Last year? No, exactly right. That was the COVID interview he did, Jojo. I think it was it Cam Mooney was interviewing? 80 metres away he stood to do the interview, then he went and shook Cam Mooney's hand.
I just got a text message from someone who might know. They reckon we're going to 4-day lockdown tomorrow, so there's a bit of COVID news.
Are you serious?
Everyone's got their people that tell them things that maybe or maybe not be true. Umpiring quickly. There's a couple of really weird decisions. One a little more egregious than the other. I thought that holding the ball that Walters didn't get paid.
Yeah.
Was absolutely nuts.
Horrendous. He's still a victim of that period where he was emphasising contact when it may not have been as...
What do you mean he was doing it as if it's in the past?
He's not doing that anymore. I'm not copping that.
That's why he only had five touches in the first half.
Oh, that is so, you are so disrespectful.
Just before we talk about that decision, he had an absolute stinker.
No,
he was not good. He was not good.
Hang on a minute.
The defense of Michael Walters is admirable. It is. And it's Stephen Hill-like from last year. And I think a lot of people would be in behind you and saying, you know, what's this guy talking about? But Michael Walters, for the player he is, he's an outstanding footballer. He's an A-grade footballer. We need more out of him than what we're getting. It's not acceptable from anyone at the club. I'm not just saying for him, but he needs to be put in position. He needs to be put in a position where we get more out of him. What a waste.
It is a waste. He needs to get back in the middle. And, you know, he didn't have, you're not giving it his role.
He's playing a half forward role, which is a really difficult role to play. And, you know, it can mean games where you maybe do a lot of selfless running without reward. You don't get to get on the end of things, but not for stretches like this and not for the entire season. And, you know, he's the kind of player that should be thriving in a role like that. You know, I don't know what it is, but he just does not look happy being there. You can see when blokes don't kick it to him, he throws hands, even if one of his teammates takes a mark. That happened a couple of times on the weekend. Something's not right. It's not right.
You see a player berating another player. I see constructive educating and urging a youngster.
Oh, I'm going to say it again. I said it last podcast. I think if this keeps up and if we can get something for him and he's happy to go or wants to go, we should look at it because it doesn't help anyone.
I don't agree. He's one of our grades. He's too good.
You can say one thing without taking away from the other. He has been amazing for us and he still is an amazing footballer.
That's what you say when you want to sack someone.
I don't want to sack him. I'd be happy if we got Michael Walters' best football, like every day of the week, you know, best five players at the club. But we're not getting it. We're not getting anywhere near it.
My heart's not letting my head form the opinion, JoJo. That's how I'm looking at it.
That umpiring decision, though, that should have resulted in a shot at goal for him. Yeah. And that's the kind of decision that's the kind of thing that probably could get him going. You know, get him really enthused to play his position on the field. If he takes down that guy, holding the ball, nails the goal from 40 metres out, everyone gets around him, you know, his head's back in the game. And maybe that's what he needs is, you know, maybe JL doesn't want to play him through the midfield, but maybe he's got to suck it up a little bit as well. And he's got to give him that early stint in the midfield, maybe 5-10 minutes, whatever it is in the first quarter, just to get him engaged.
And get him moving.
A bit like we said with Akers, you know, like he needs some physical contact. He needs to kind of, you know, get that physicality and physical investment in the game to be able to get the best out of himself. Maybe Walters needs some midfield time to get around the footy, get a few touches early, you know, get enthused, get around it, and then you can send him forward and maybe you get the best out of him then. But I think something needs to happen because, you know, this kind of featured last year, maybe to a lesser extent. I feel like he had a bit more of an impact last year, but this year has been no good.
No, it's a fair call. You make a fair call. But I've only been saying that for the last dozen weeks, Jota. Get him in the middle. Get him some midfield time.
The other decision quickly was the non-mark paid to Liam Henry.
Yes.
What's your view on this? Some people say he should have protected the ball more and hung on to it. I think it's a mark. What do you think?
I'm going to be 50 cents each way. I think he should have... He sort of relaxed the minute he... But he stopped the ball and he controlled it. If he took that above his head, it probably gets called a mark.
So, was he a little bit cool? I mean, you nicknamed him Fonzie preseason last year. Was there a little bit of I'm too cool in the a little bit of blasé-ness when he took the mark?
I think there might have been. There's a little bit of Hollywood crept in, I think.
I think it might have. I think he'll learn a lesson though pretty quick.
Yeah.
Injuries from the game. We had Tabs come out. He's got a high calf strain. Also, we think. I haven't seen any results from the scan yet. Hopefully, it's not too bad. JL said in his presser that they're optimistic that it's not too bad. And Fife, it was, well, they thought was playing right up until the point where they were getting dressed and then he pulled out. So, they reckon that he's going to be a go for next week. Yep. So that's pretty encouraging. A game where we don't lose 3 to 4 players on the Monday morning.
Even ridiculous. 14-7 goals. We don't lose too many players.
Yeah.
Fortune's changing.
I've watched that. I don't know why, but I watched that first crack show that's on Fox Footy after all the Sunday games, and they had brought up a statistic of the clubs that have been able to roll out, or what number of players have played every game this season for which club.
Yeah.
And I think most is 12 games, 12 players that have played every game for a club. We've had five.
We've had five of the 12.
No, we've had five players play every game so far this year.
Oh, sorry. Right, okay.
So we've had to change our lineup. Also, yeah, we've had to change our lineup around just about every other week. We've not been able to roll out a consistent 22. And they were praising Longmuir's coaching performance for that, being able to juggle and switch guys around. But, you know, and it wasn't just, you know, it's the sarongs. We had a couple of key players, but some of the other guys that were playing, they're not the fifes, obviously, that we've missed. You know, the key pillars down back, Tabs, Lob. All these guys have missed games.
So it really is a credit to the team down there, you know, to the coaching team down there. The side they've been able to put on the park under huge adversity.
Well, it's like putting a different jigsaw puzzle together every week, isn't it?
Every week, yeah.
We did have some encouraging performances down at Peel, I have to say. Mm-hmm. This week, O'Driscoll, the yet-to-debut rookie from this year, had 25 touches, 5 tackles. Big Lloyd Meek had 21 touches, 31 hit-outs. Blakely, 27 touches, 2 goals. Giro with 20 and 2 goals, 1. And Valenti had an improved first half before he dropped away in the second half, so probably unlikely for next week, even though people want to see him debut. Be good to see O'Driscoll, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. It would. I'm still not sold on his disposal, JJ. It's not.
Well, I think from the sounds of it, it's improving. But if he puts another game together like that, I think you've got to reward good performance in the twos, especially for the really young players.
Who does he come in for? Nathan Wilson, isn't he?
Yeah. I didn't think Wilson was too bad. I think he really suited the way we wanted to play on the weekend. Being able to link up, he was on the end of a lot of those handball chains where we broke through the lines and then he, you know, got the long kick in. So I think he was pretty effective, but I think he was pretty lucky to play considering why he was suspended the week before and the action that led to that suspension. So, it'd be interesting. Yeah, maybe they'll take the opportunity not to make a change or just bring Fife in to get some continuity going, because that's probably value in itself.
You'd like to see him get a gig. You'd like to see O'Driscoll get a run out.
Yeah, so that was it, I reckon. All in all, can't be disappointed with just about anything that we saw on Saturday against Collingwood, apart from the early start. Good.
Don't do those 11:45 a.m. games. Ridiculous.
What, so we could rush back to get into 2 weeks of quarantine?
Yeah.
quick. I think we're still planning for Carlton on Saturday at Optus, aren't we?
Well, not if your mail's right.
No. Oh, yeah. That was my new mail. My old mail. My mail earlier today was from my mate at Optus, who reckons they were all getting prepared for a night game on Saturday. But
who's your mailman, Peter Seamage?
It's not good mail. It's not good mail. Anyway, so we could be headed to Melbourne for a hub. Who knows? You never know, do you? Anyway,
no.
Just quite quickly, though. You know, we spoke about last week how we were missing out on these marquee fixtures. You know, Thursday night, maybe not marquee, but it's a standalone fixture that the whole nation has eyes on, really. The same as a Friday night game. Yeah. I just wouldn't give the club a bit of praise because, you know, I was a little bit unhappy. You'd look back at how many times we've missed out on these big games and the lack of pressure we put on them to, you know, we just have to always suck it up and, you know, we'll travel to Melbourne, we'll come back here and quarantine. And, you know, we won't have a Friday night game. But they pushed and pushed and pushed. We were going to have a Sunday afternoon game, but they pushed and got a Saturday night fixture against Carlton. So credit to them. Bit of a change from the Rosic Lion era where we seemed to just roll over and take what we were given.
Yes, gotcha. Yeah, that was good.
They got off scot-free for that, didn't they? I mean, there was no criticism really on that.
None. None at all. No, it's... Yeah, I'm with you. They got an absolute pass on that, didn't they?
Well, especially Rosic. I mean, Rosic came in and did the right thing when stole Ross Lyon from St Kilda, and he pretty much lived off that for his entire tenure.
Yeah, he didn't do a lot else, did he?
Well, I think after that, he was just working on getting a job at AFL House.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why we didn't get any Friday night games. Anyway.
Yeah.
Is it time for the Neighbourhood Watch?
The Neighbourhood Watch, Jojo. Yes, Jojo, it's the Neighbourhood Watch.
It's back. Been missing.
I've been working on this one. This one's taken a bit of time to put together. It's a little bit long, so I better get into it. But they've had a rough few days, the Coasters. The crowds got turned away, and they got pumped by the Dogs, you know. So
tell you what, there's not been a lot of coverage of that loss.
Dogs got the 4 points, move on.
There's a lot of that going on, isn't there? I would have liked to see some deeper investigation into what went wrong. Anyway, continue.
I think that's rightly called for. But look, let's put that aside. It's time to raise the vibration, Jojo. It's time to get around them, show them some love. Now, last week, pretty exciting week, and regardless of, I think, how low a regard you hold the West Coast Eagle organisation, you had to be thrilled to see Willie Rioli back. Is that fair?
Yeah, definitely.
You're in that? I got caught up in it. Or the round-the-clock reporting, from the adoring media, what about the photographic, the photos from the, through the windshield of the car? How good were they? the rolling headlines, the numerous takes from Nick Nat, what he thought. Very, very emotional week, Jojo. And I can't remember such fanfare since the Pope came to WA back in 1986, I think it was. Anyway, the West Coast Eagles Association, they really do it well. They go that extra hard yard to support their players, or their cabal members, whatever you want to call them. When their troubled stars fall off the straight and narrow, they get out there and they pick them back up. They send in the cleaners, run cover for them. They literally monumentally award them naming rights. They slap plaques on various stadium sections, you know, in their honour. Now, there are too many of those examples to go through them all, but we'll just quickly give you an example of a couple so the listeners know what we're talking about. The late, great Chris Mainwaring, Jojo, he got a wing named after him, okay? Wings of an Angel, that was the inspiration behind that, okay? And I think they referred to, in the end, they were referring it to as Chris Mainwaring. That's how they were calling it. The tunnel the Eagles run out of, you know, onto the ground, that became the Ben Cousins pipe. Now, I'm not sure what the inspiration was behind that one, but it's the support and the recognition that is important here. Now, lastly, do you know the golf cart type ambulance that they roll out into the ground to pick up a player when he can't walk off? You know, the ambulance thing. Yeah, well, when during a game now at the Eagles, when it happens at the Eagles and a player needs cutting off, they call for the Chad Fletcher stretcher. That's what that's named after. All wonderful initiatives, Jojo, celebrating and enriching their culture and history. Now, so keeping in line with that tradition, okay, as part of welcoming back Willie to the West Coast family, have a guess what they've done for him. Guess what they've done? You'll never guess. They've provided him with a choice of two options. They've said to Willie, you can either have your name on the interchange gate or on the Optus Stadium first aid clinic. So they've given him an option of two that he can choose. So Willie gets to decide whether he wants his name on the Gatorade room. The Gatorade room. Don't they? The Gatorade room. Geez, they do it well, don't they? That's off to them down there, Jojo. And on that note, all the best, Willie, and welcome back. They gave him to the Gatorade room.
I think on that note.
Choose wisely, Willie. Choose wisely.
I think that's about enough, isn't it?
That's about enough for today, Jojo.
They
do it well down there.
We'll have Carlton somewhere. Someday, at some point in the next week. We've got a 4-day lockdown for sure now. So it's not going to be here, you wouldn't think. So who knows? But until we next preview a football game, are you still down with the restomp?
Oh, look, Collingwood is an example of what can happen to your superannuation. Without a contribution of bucks, it leaves your investment in halves.
Start wearing purple, wearing purple. Start wearing purple for me now. All your sanity and wits, they will all vanish, I promise. It's just a matter of time. So, yeah.